John, were you saying that one of your kids asked you to say a word?
Oh, I have this one student named who keeps trying to, like, trick me into cursing. And he was, like, looking kind of sad the other day. I'm like, are you okay? You seem upset. And he's like, yeah, I'm all right. I'm like, okay, you seem a little down in class. And he's like, yeah, but you know what would make me feel better? And I was like, what? And he's like, if you say this, and he holds out his hand, and on it, he had written the letters P-H-U-C-K.
Isn't that the purest story in the world?
And I was like, Puhuck? And he was like, Gah!
No!
The Babylon Project was our last, best hope for peace. A self-contained world 5 miles long, located in neutral territory. A place of commerce and diplomacy for a quarter of a million humans and aliens. A shining beacon in space, all alone in the night. It was the dawn of the third age of mankind, the year the Great War came upon us all. This is the story of the last of the Babylon stations. The year is 2259. The name of the place is Babylon 5.
Hello and welcome to Chats, a television podcast, Season 6, Chat Salon 5. My name is Alan, and I'm joined by the teak to my teep, Magellan.
Hey, can I just say now, in case we forget, it's weird that they had those terms when, like, it was special that Jason Ironheart was a telekinetic. Anyway, sorry.
Yeah, we'll why do they have to...
So basically what you're saying is that I fundamentally don't exist, but you pretend that I do?
Yes.
Cool. I like that. I'll take it.
But you exist to me, and that's all that matters.
Yeah. It is all that matters.
How are you doing, Magellan?
It's cold where I
Frick.
Am. Yeah.
It's cold, it's I do warm. Be.
It's warm inside my heart.
Aw. Aw, that's wonderful. We have a special guest this week, folks. We are also We are also joined by the OG Queen of Space herself. It's Olivia.
Oh, wow. That's a good one. I was actually wondering if I was going to get like a Babylon 5 one, but I got a Gundam one. That's pretty good.
Nice. Thank you for translating that for the folks like me who did not get it.
You want to go to Google and you want to Google Haman Karn? Now, that's kind of a difficult one, but that's H-A-M...
Go into Google.com first.
Yeah, Google G-O-O-G.
All right, well, now I'm just looking at... I did it right. Okay, oh, cool.
Great.
Cool hair. Nice. Yeah.
Right?
Yes. I was going to say...
I gotta watch this Gundam show.
Oh, no, Magellan, they don't write her that well.
No, they don't. No.
It's dang, like but the cool hair, though.
Cool hair. There's one episode where she has it, like, down because she just took a shower, and it's unreal. Like, it's a completely different character.
It's true. She's not making this up. This is the Chat Salon 5 podcast, the Babylon 5 podcast of your dreams, wherein we discuss two episodes of the TV show Babylon 5 every week. This week
we
are discussing...
slowly plant concepts in your mind to flirt with your coworkers.
Exactly.
We also do that.
I can confirm that if you want to flirt with a girl, you should tell her you're running for Queen of Space and then be like, well, do I have your vote?
And then, and then just write, like, put Y/N on your hand, and then she has to go and write them on your hand, and then you're like, yes, thank you for your service.
The thing is, if she says that you do have her vote, then you know she likes you. But if she says that she won't vote for you, then you can be like, well, what do I have to do to get your vote?
Oh.
And that might work. I may have tried that recently.
Yeah?
And now I'm married.
Hi, Pris.
Aw, I know Pris. Wait, I know Pris. Anyways, we're going to have like an internet-wide meetup. All right, cool. We're talking about Season 2, Episode 19, Divided Loyalties. And we're also later going to be discussing Season 2, Episode 20, The Long Twilight Struggle. First up is Divided Loyalties, which was written by JMS, directed by Jesus Trevino. It aired October 11th, 1995, and it takes place between November 24th and December 2nd of 2259. Magellan, what happened in Divided Loyalties?
In this episode, Lita Alexander returns to the station, convinced there is a traitor on board. Susan Ivanova makes a startling revelation. It's a big one, huh? That's probably why you wanted to be on this episode, Olivia.
That is why I wanted to be. I decided that I wanted to be on this episode. I think the first time that Alan messaged me and... No, wait. This was before we started direct messaging. I think it was just when he posted in a Discord server we were both in that he was, like, incredibly committed to the Talia-Susan relationship.
Mm-hmm.
And I was like, oh, I gotta be on that episode. Honey. I gotta help him through it.
I'm still crying. I was actually going to ask you, that's related to that, Olivia, what is your experience with Babylon 5? Because you've watched a little bit more of the show than we have, or a lot more.
Yeah, Babylon 5 is like my white whale of 90s sci-fi TV for a while, because I just watched a ton of it. Like, I went through a period where that was just what I was doing. I watched, like, Buffy and Angel and a few others that I don't remember. I watched Farscape, and then Babylon 5 kept popping up, and I was like, oh, this show seems kind of cool, but I just couldn't, like, find it anywhere. And then I think I found Chats first, and then you guys mentioned something about doing Babylon 5, so I watched, like, three seasons on my commute to work over a few months. And then I was listening to a Chats episode, and it was like, oh, we're really going to do Babylon 5. And I'm like, oh, I'll just get there then. Like, eventually. So I have a little bit of foreknowledge, but I don't know everything.
Cool.
This is definitely one of those episodes where it's great to be watching it in, like, slightly faster, at a faster pace than the show is coming out, especially without the season breaks, because it is pulling from so much of Babylon 5's past and what your expectations of what the show is going to do, and just kind of doing this thing that Babylon 5 has done a couple times now where they just hit the reset button and they're like, all right, like, there's a quote. There are a lot of amazing quotes in the Lurker's Guide page for this episode, but JMS basically being like, when I start writing a season, I imagine, like, carrying a loaded gun and pointing at the cast of the whole show and saying, who can I kill and keep the show good?
Like, what is the... Oh, my God.
Yeah.
Oh, no.
He has another quote where he's like, you know, fans were saying to him, like, oh, Talia had all this foreshadowing and this development. Why'd you kill her? And his response is like, because people die, dude. Because good people die. And it doesn't make sense. And it sucks. But sometimes, like, they just die. And also, the actress left the show.
Oh, is that why they did this?
So I did a little bit of research, and it is confirmed that she left, and this is, like, she gave them some notice, so they wrote this, like, sort of, like, send-off episode, and
yeah.
I couldn't find any quotes from her herself, but JMS references, you know, so with a grain of salt, he says that she wanted more screen time, more than, like, they were willing to give her, and I'm sort of on her side. They don't give Talia enough screen time in this show.
No, not at all.
No, not even close.
But JMS sounds kind of bitter. He's like, oh, it can't be the Talia show. I think it should be the Talia show. I think it should be the Ivanova show, and then Talia should be hanging around.
It's becoming the Ivanova show, though. This episode in particular is like, yeah, Talia gets her send-off and has some great scenes and delivers an amazing... Andrea Thompson delivers an amazing performance, but Ivanova really bringing the emotional weight this episode as well, both with the aforementioned revelation that she is... I mean, we can say it because this is a show where we talk about the show that we watched. She is a latent telepath.
Yeah. That scene where she's in Sheridan's... The scene where she's in Sheridan's quarters and she starts, like, trying to tell him, and then she, like, cannot say the words at first and she needs a sec. I'm like, oh, no.
Oh, honey.
Like, that's some real shit. She was like, I thought I was ready for this. And, like, oof.
She wants to be ready for this. And it's weird. Like, you kind of know this episode is... like gonna be a little bit heavy after the cold, but not the literally the first scene is Delenn and Sheridan being like, well, the news, like Earth's opinion newspaper on the Mimbari is interesting, and it's like, get the fuck out of here.
But give me like some that. News on the World Series.
I love the idea that it was you can cute. Just like walk up to a computer and it's like, give me all the regular news, but then a little bit of sports news.
Yeah, it's Apple News, but they give you a physical paper. Like,
I want right, to. Right, I'm right. So interested. What is the Sheridan? I think this is a bad move. Why are you using standard content preferences? Who sets what a standard content preference is? You yeah. know that there's like government conspiracy shit. So why
especially,
are you like?
Yeah, when he's like conspiracy guy.
Give me the give regular me the news.
All the normal stuff that's news. Been vetted. Maybe people leave codes in the sports writing about the World Series.
It's so true. It's like about messages. The war. They sneak them into the scores.
Yeah.
And speaking of the conspiracy and the wars, we cut to, meanwhile, on the Sirium Planum colony of Mars, there's a guy named, I'm pretty sure his name is Derek. I can't believe there's just a guy on Babylon 5 whose name is Derek.
He's got 2 Ks. That's how they make it future.
Oh, is it written somewhere as 2K Derek with 2Ks? That's fantastic.
Oh my God.
No, I'm just assuming this.
Oh, that's going to be headcanon now. Derek is handing off a data crystal to somebody named Lee in a sewer on Mars. He says, give it to Babylon 5. Tell them it's wicked dangerous. Oh, I'm dead now. Which I don't care about. Garibaldi and Sheridan having a fun dick conversation in the bathroom. Sharon says, you know what I miss, Garibaldi? Just big honking. I'm not like paraphrasing. He says, big honking, solid, massive trees.
Yeah, that scene has a bit of a weird energy for a few seconds because it's Sheridan and Garibaldi hanging out in the men's bathroom talking about trees until everyone else leaves. And then I think Garibaldi takes out a bug sweeper, but like before that, I was like, hold on. Wait a second.
What if somebody else was already like planted something and you didn't know it? Like, what are you doing? And then he's like, we should invite Talia to our fun conspiracy party crew. She's a telepath.
Cool. That sounds like a good idea.
That won't go wrong at all this episode.
Right.
And so we're like the first half of this episode is just doing a great job, like seeding all these little cool things that are going to pay off. Like Talia and Ivanova start this episode on a very hot date. Where they're just like eating dinner together and talking about their feelings and how they trust each other a lot. And then fucking.
I think it's a brunch date, actually.
Oh, yeah. It's like mimosas kind of brunch date. There is a bar nearby. You're right.
Well, for one thing, they're gay. And
yeah, that's true.
For a second thing, Talia then references needing to find a place to sleep tonight in the most obvious play.
Wait a minute. You're telling me that two ladies can't just hang out in their satin robes at night and talk about how one of them woke up in the middle of the night and walked away? What?
There's a good JMS quote out there where somebody asked him, like, yo, are they gay? And he's like, yes. Jesus.
Stop. What's wrong with you?
That's what the bed scene was. We put the bed scene in there because they're gay.
They're fucking... Right.
We couldn't show a kiss because we were on like Fox or something.
Yeah. Well, they were on a very conservative network. But in this like hot date scene, Talia's like, oh, my air conditioning doesn't work. So like, if only I had a place to stay with a bed. And oh, you only have one bed? Oh, but you're my friend. Like, it's not weird, is it? I don't think it's weird. Oh, you have an extra robe. Oh, sick.
It's a bad play. But luckily for her, Ivanova is not that quick on the uptake.
Right.
We find out that the alert signal that Corwin was telling them about is an injured person on a mystery ship, and it turns out it's Lita Alexander from The Gathering. Guys, remember The Gathering? Me neither.
No.
Nope.
Do not. Can't say I do.
It's really funny that I like went after this moment, I paused and was like, all right, I need to remember what happened in The Gathering. Like, I need to be a good podcast host. I want to understand what the plot was. And I went back and it's like, there's a guy who poisoned Kosh, and they thought it was Sinclair, but it was actually Del Varner. But it was actually a Minbari disguised as a human using a, what do they call it? Like a camouflage net or something.
Yeah.
that's
Do you
it.
Ever think about how the Minbari keep trying to frame the commanders of Babylon 5 for murder?
The Minbari are just a collective old man Jenkins who are like, if I get the captain in trouble, he'll go to jail. And then they go to jail. Every like time.
Scooby-Doo, is that what you're saying?
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, and then, all right, here we go.
Season 4, they have a new guy, and then the Minbari are like, oh, screw this dude. We got to try this. 2 murders.
We got to do a double murder now. Let's do our best. Here we go. Scooby-Doo characters, Babylon 5 character parallels.
Had like a flash of Garibaldi and like Scooby-Doo animation style. Ooh, I don't like that.
I do not like that. Wait, so Garibaldi has to be Scooby? Is he Scooby-Doo?
Right, it's hard to figure out because Sheridan's definitely Fred, right?
Yeah, he's boring. That's right.
I was thinking of Franklin as Fred.
Oh, yeah, I guess Franklin does have a sort of handsomeness to him.
Yeah, yep. Sheridan is Shaggy. He's like the burnout guy, the conspiracy guy.
I guess, yeah, in his younger days. And then this is what happens to Shaggy, is he just becomes an uptight military commander.
Well,
who still believes in the same conspiracy theories.
There actually is a Scooby-Doo show where at one point Shaggy's parents send him to boot camp.
Oh, I've seen this.
Oh, yep. Cool.
And then Scooby-Doo breaks him out with a tank.
It's very weird. Scooby-Doo got wild. There's also an episode of Scooby-Doo where Velma and coincidentally Velma and Daphne sleep in the same room together, and they like exchange out. They're wearing each other's clothes.
Yo, their hair is almost the same.
Yeah, like what are you trying to say? What I'm saying is they're gay. She is question leader, that is, by Sheridan and Franklin. She mentions that she escaped PsyCorps after being interrogated for 2 years, and she tried to sneak into Vorlon space. Because the important thing about her role in the gathering was that she and Dr. Kyle were the only people who saw Kosh's secret, whatever's inside of his big helmet. So she's been trying to basically see the Vorlons again and get back to them ever since. And in her travels, she joined a revolutionary movement on Mars. She mentions...
as you do.
As one does, you know, you just... Yeah. Like, whoops, I accidentally joined the revolutionary movement.
She's like, I needed to make some
money. It's one of those moments where... Yeah.
Where are the revolutionaries who are paying money?
Right, like where are you guys getting the money to just pay randos? Right.
I need some money. Yeah. Show me to the local communist cadre who's like just going to pay me money to do whatever.
Yeah, it's like all these people who thought that what's-his-face is paying for protesters. Can't remember his name.
Oh, yeah, George Soros.
Yeah, you know. Yeah, Soros, thank you.
I probably shouldn't say the name because it's like, oh, it's literally slander.
It's become a slur.
Sorry, George.
She finds out that PsyCorps on Sierra Planum is doing experiments on sleeper agents. And they have a sleeper agent on Babylon 5 whose name is Control. And if Lita is given the opportunity to send the activation code to each of the command staff, she can find out without actually scanning them which one is Control, and they'll react and it'll be awesome.
Yeah.
A thing I realized rewatching this episode is this is kind of foreshadowed all the way back. Is it season 1 with the death of personality? Like they reveal that humans have the capability of doing this. And that's actually why I think this concept is like really interesting, because it takes this thing that they introduced, they had a one-off episode about, and now it's basically back, and they're like, what if we made this just way more screwed up?
Yeah. Sci-fi has sort of 2 versions of, like, there's a secret bad person, and one of them is like, uh-oh, Picard got cloned in the transporter, and it's stupid. And I've never watched Star Trek, so I apologize to Star Trek. And the other version is like, there's a fundamental part of our world building that makes it possible for a character that you know to be someone totally different than who you thought they were. The only other time I've seen this in such a way that it made me feel this tense and like it could be anyone was what's it called? Battlestar Galactica. So I thought that was pretty cool that they like pulled this off when it could have been really cheesy and like, really?
Well, they ratchet up the tension really well with this. Like, there's that scene a little bit later, just to jump ahead, where
basically they're like, okay, we've scanned most of the main staff. Now we need to get everybody who works in like a higher up position on B5. Just they all stand in front of Sheridan and Lita's behind them and just point, like, eyeballs them real good. And then he's like, I just want to say, you, Commander Jeff, that you're doing great. And oh, we're good. Okay, bye. Bye, Jeff. All right, next. Just this like long train of people who think they're gonna get promoted, and then he's like, "No, I just want you to know I like you."
We're like fired. Some of them, he doesn't even bother to say anything. With what's his face? Who's the guy you like? Zach Allen.
Yeah.
He's just like, "Hey," and then Zach's like, "Hey, what do you?" Oh no, you're good. Oh, okay. Thank you, sir.
Zach Allen, noted Pepsi ass.
Hey. Hey, you know what? Oh, it's fine.
He's out here like, oh, I love wearing this black armband, making some money.
What a stupid.
Yeah, Garibaldi. I think that's characters. In this episode, right?
Yeah,
some
that's
characters
that, that's
who
that
just
scene.
Don't know.
That's the scene. Garibaldi's like, so Zach Allen, you're still wearing that? And he's like, dude, they pay me for it. It's sick. Why wouldn't you wear this black armband? He's like,
there's like no problems with it. There's like nothing bad that will happen.
I'm sure that nothing with a group called the Night Watch will go bad. I'm sure it will. I'm great. I'm excited for it.
Some characters just don't know they're on TV, you know?
Yeah. I don't know if you've seen like the Night Watch logo up close, but they like definitely have like some kind of like yellow circle with an eye in it. It's not good iconography.
I wouldn't wear that Halloween costume.
Like this is
stuff. Mm-hmm. Yeah. I'm looking at it right now. It's just like an eye with like it's narrowing its eyes looking at you. There is also an interspersed scene here where Delenn and Sheridan, this is the most important scene in the whole episode. Delenn and Sheridan have a conversation in the botanical gardens, and they mentioned food shipments to Narn outposts, and then Delenn, he's like, oh, they'll kick my butt. And then what's the actual line? One of you wrote the line down, I'm sure of it.
I remember it word for word because it was seared into my brain as a stupid scene. Where Sheridan's like, oh, I'm really stressed, whatever, but, and then, or no, this is a real kick in the butt, whatever he said. And then Delenn's like, but what?
Oh, I remember the line.
Yeah.
Sheridan says something along the lines of like, sometimes life really kicks you in the butt. And then there's like a beat, and then Delenn goes, life kicks you, but... because she doesn't know what a butt is.
So dumb. And then the explanation is she's like, oh, when I learned English, I didn't learn any of the naughty words.
That seems like, wild. But. How do you send a high-level ambassador to another civilization or just another culture and you don't teach them, like, what are the rude things that you can say? If only to prevent them from saying the rude
things. Saying something rude. Yeah, exactly. Yes. And also, like, sometimes you have to know how to say butt, and it's not really a naughty word. It's just that part of your body. Like, what does she know how to say? Posterior?
Rear? She does. She says posterior. I think she says posterior in the scene. Yeah.
Okay.
But that's all she has. She like, has an idea of what it is anatomically, but she hasn't thought about it and hasn't thought of the slang term for butt. And so he's like... he doesn't even explain it to her. He just has that classic, like, oh, you're so naive. Like, that's adorable how cute.
Yeah, here's what annoyed me about this is last week when we talked about the Delenn-Sheridan relationship, we had such an amazing interaction where she's like, I could go die and get infected with a deadly disease, and secretly I love you.
Right.
And it was like... you know, dignifying for both of them, and both of them are doing like their thing and laying it all out there. And then this scene has like this cheesy, sappy, romantic music and that little dumb tilt down to her touching his hand.
Yeah.
And it's just framed as like him looking at her like, oh, this stupid lady, I have a crush on her. You do not need to make a woman not know something in order for her to be attractive.
Because the thing about Delenn in a lot of other scenes is she's actually like a very like self-aware person. Because there's a thing that she does twice in this episode where she tells Sheridan a thing about Minbari culture, but like with a little wink and a nod, like she's like, yeah, okay, this may seem a little weird to you, but like it's my thing. And so she's actually very good at like communicating things that she wants to tell him in a way that she seems to think that he'll like gel with. And she's like aware that there are things about her culture that seem like weird to humans, but she's like able to communicate them. And then it's just like, oh, I don't know what a butt is.
It's dumb.
There is a good thing in this scene where she's like pressing Sheridan on his mood. She's like, you seem upset. What's wrong? And Sheridan has this line where he goes, I'm fine. Oh, no, I'm not fine. Actually, you know, everything kind of sucks. And that's like a big...
Yeah, I like that.
It's a big mood.
It's a very big mood. And speaking of big moods, there's a couple of really cute scenes here where we have Ivanova and Italia just hanging out in robes and just like making cutie eyes at each other, talking about teeps and teeks. They like straight up touch faces at one point. Talia's like, you're the only person I can trust. It's deeply gay. I love all this.
She says, there's only one person on this station that I can trust implicitly, and it's you. And I'm a gay girl. I'm just fucking... Girl did that shit to me, I'd be like, all right, I'm gone.
I'm
Goodbye.
Gone. You're my whole life.
I will follow you everywhere.
I'm on the floor right now. I don't stand. I'm just sort of going to just lie here for a while.
When your legs don't work like they used to before.
Oh, boy. That's like the fourth Ed Sheeran reference that has happened to me this week.
Hell yeah. No, that song plays at my job too much. Lita is escorted to another facility. The power goes out. We have this kind of corny shot where like a person off screen like puts a hand out and like shoots her with a gun, like pew, pew, it's me, the mystery man. She flees, and then Sheridan's like, actually, we should let her scan us because we don't want to die, which is actually a pretty good mature moment for Sheridan, like doing the boss thing of being like, I know we have our morals, but also living is good. And this person's going to just kill a bunch of us if we don't take care of it.
Yeah, like clearly somebody is up to something on this station, so we got to figure it out.
Mm-hmm. Right. And it's in this moment that Ivanova, or after this, that she finally tells Sheridan her big secret. The way she developed powers was when her mother would try to scan her mind. She was so opposed to it that she would learn to block it and found out that, oops, I'm actually also a telepath. Uh-oh.
It is so rare. Yeah, go ahead.
It's like an interesting lore thing. I want to know, like, are they trying to drop here that you can develop telepathy in certain conditions? Because PsyCorps seems to treat it as a genetic thing, you know, like with their whole eugenics baby project to make, you know, stronger telepaths. But Ivanova kind of sort of implies that she learned to do it over time, and maybe if she could do it more, that she would get stronger. Something I'm interested in.
Yeah, it seems like she calls it latent telepathy, which seems to indicate that like it's something that maybe it could have happened that she would have never known that she had that power, but just the excessive stress of your own mom invading your mind probably engaged that defense mechanism.
Yeah, she has a line that's like, she's not even like a level one on their power scale.
Yeah.
Right, she doesn't register. But she does register when Lita finally... Well, it's weird. Like, when they're doing the scans, it seems like... Well, Lita realizes that she's being blocked, and she's like, that's weird. And she's kind of, sort of, like, outing Ivanova in this moment, but not explicitly.
That's a good scene from Ivanova's point. Like, when Lita apologizes, and Ivanova's just like, oh, fuck off. Like,
right.
It's a very good, like, very bitter, like, you know, you did it, whatever, like, you really messed with me, but there's nothing I could have done about it. That's like a theme for Ivanova in this episode, is like getting really badly hurt and just having nothing to do for it.
Yeah.
That's a good point. It's a lot of it is just hurt done to her, and she's like losing control of her situations in various places. Like, she can't keep the secret, because if it comes out in the scan, then everyone's gonna know and it's gonna be like a big deal. So she has to tell someone, and she tries to tell Talia and it doesn't work. She tries to tell Sheridan and it works, but then she still has to do the scan. And then we find out later that Talia is, spoilers, is control. And so her whole like trust relationship network is falling apart in front of her, and also her like only love on this ship. She's threatening Lita in this moment, and I totally get it. Like, I totally can empathize with that moment.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
after all the goofing, after Garibaldi being just the, this is what Magellan would do also in this scene, is if we're all getting scanned, he just like makes faces and goes like, oh God.
Yeah, just kidding.
Just
I like that.
I am Sheridan. I am Sheridan in that moment. Like, I'm going to shoot you.
You don't get to do that.
I am holding your gun.
Yeah.
Right. Garibaldi doing the cool thing of giving up his gun. And then...
But also kind of hinting that, like, maybe I'm going to draw it. Like, he's really playing with fire in this episode.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, it's true. And then the funny... This is kind of... It's not intended to be funny, but when Talia walks in, Lita just, like... The way they represent telepathy happening is just she kind of, like, narrows her eyes. Like, she's pissed at you. Or, like, you said something really mean. So Talia just walks in like, hey guys, I brought Burger. Lita's in the back like, don't look, you look weird. And then, oops, it turns out she pops and she goes, the chorus mother, the chorus father.
Yeah, there blah, goes a main character like LinkedIn, you would have missed that happened.
Exactly, just gone. It's a cool like turn. It's really amazing how fast it happens. And then they have to really just drill down that this has been... Like, we know that the show is seeding things like this, but then Garibaldi, like, has black and white flashbacks, like, oh, yeah, she was talking to Kosh, and that was weird. And she kept having all these different interactions that seemed mysterious.
Oh, yeah.
Which, by the way... Yeah, go ahead.
Can we talk about Sheridan's vision real quick? Speaking of the scenes, it was in a previous scene, but it's when Ivanova, like, discloses to him the latent telepath thing. And he has that sort of flashback to the old dream.
He sees the bird on her shoulder dream.
On the bird on her shoulder. I think she has Talia's hairstyle in that flashback.
Oh.
I think that's what that's about. I think that's them trying to sort of take whatever they were foreshadowing with that dream and sort of move it into this new plot. But the way I saw it was, you know, it's Ivanova, but with Talia's hairstyle sort of, you know, in dream logic ways, they're both sort of like tangled together.
Yeah. The Talia stuff, they keep, it's interesting. Like, there was that weird episode in season one where her whole plot was that she was doing telepathy stuff for Kosh. And then at the end, he was like, oh, I was just messing with you. And I told, like, that's what that was. Mm-hmm. Was he just knew all along.
Because he seemed to not like her, like, throughout the show. Which is like, Kosh, buddy, could you say something?
In flames. Never forget in flames.
I don't know if either of y'all have seen the clip from Yu Yu Hakusho where he's like, what the hell? That guy's got demon horns. That's not normal. And then he goes, well, not going to let it ruin my day. And he gets back to reading his newspaper.
Oh, yes, yep, yep, yep.
And that's Kosh.
Yeah, pretty much.
You have to at some point, if you're Kosh and you're just seeing all the weirdest things in the world and you're just like, well, all right, now it's a Tuesday. Like, okay, there's an evil telepath on the ship. Great. I'm glad.
Keep my eye on that one.
Yeah, for sure. My one big green eye. Talia and Ivanova have a just gut-wrenching final scene where Ivanova's like, I trusted you. I like had a lot of things like that I wanted to tell you and all, and we were going to go so many places. And Talia's like, dog, I'm not the person you fell in love with. Like, fuck out of here. I hate you. You're the bad
totally,
guy.
Totally gone.
Ooh.
Yeah.
Ugh, is this
and
mouth?
You just get no resolution to that. You're just left wondering, was any of it real? Or was it all just manipulated by this other personality? It is brutally bleak.
I can make it more brutally bleak.
Do it.
Yeah, please.
So this is this is extremely like, you know, like a standpoint analysis is just me coming to it, but... So when I look at this plot, I think it is a little kind of clunky in many ways. Like, it's sort of, this is sort of the whole episode. You know, there's not even like any kind of B plot, but it's also like odd. But a way it sort of really works thematically for me is I sort of read this as a metaphor for being turned down by a closeted girl.
No.
Because
okay.
Read it. Yeah, I watched this episode, and it's just sort of like, it's explicitly gay, but it's also just sort of dripping in gay subtext, and like, the conspiracy theory stuff as gay subtext, because you have Sheridan and Garibaldi in the bathroom, and they're like, should we let Talia in? Like, can she be trusted? Like, is she cool? Like, what? And then it cuts immediately to Susan and Talia going romantically closer together. And Talia even has that line. She has this line. She says, how did it take us so long to get to this point? Meaning brunch and dates. But throughout the episode, Talia is sort of positioned as this person who is, you know, both a potential ally and a potential threat. And that's sort of always how she has been throughout the show, being linked to Psycor, being linked to like one of the main villains at this right. point. Is that fair to say?
And, I think so.
And them sort of letting her closer, coming closer to letting her into the conspiracy in this episode is put alongside Susan inviting her into her life romantically. And then there's this switch where it's like, oh, actually this person you thought that you could trust, actually you couldn't. And the whole time you were revealing things to her in confidence, she was taking them and filing them away to hurt you with later. But, you know, there's sort of this, it's a tragedy where, like, it's not that Talia actually did it. It was that she was victimized by Psycor into doing it. And, you know, that villain speech that she gives in the end, you know, it's sort of very arch. It's like, oh, actually, none of that was real. None of it. It was all a complete lie. And I did it all just to mess with you. And it almost sort of, you know, to me, it almost sort of reads like a denial, basically, like a self-denial as much as it is like just her being sort of a villainous to.
Right. You question how much of that is really manipulation and how much of that is like this thing failed in its mission. And it's just kind of like swiping at her.
And a theme that she brings up, that Control even brings up, is like the, she says like the mission like was like a drain on her. She's like aggravated to have had to sit like in the back of Talia's mind and like watch her do things. So
right, what must it feel like to be an entire personality where this is your only purpose? I guess it's getting back into the sci-fi side of it and not into the reading that you were just sharing, which I think is like totally on point.
Yeah, I think what really like makes it sting at the end is like then there's just nothing to be done. Like JMS has this quote where he's like, "Oh well, I didn't have them kill Control because then they would be just as bad as Control," and I think that's a bad one. I think it's better that they don't kill her because, you know, there's like nothing to be done there. Like you really can't do anything in that situation, and so they just have to sort of shuffle her off on like a bureaucratic excuse. And it's just such a scene. Like there's Susan goes in and she tries to talk to her and there's just nothing to be gained. And this is me going like, oh, I'm a gay girl, but like in the other way.
Exactly.
So then is this, that's it for Talia Winters? Like she doesn't go to jail or something? It's just like, whoops, you foiled my plot and now I'm leaving.
Yeah. As far as I know, she does not show up in the show. Like I imagine weird. Based on the fact that like, you know, for the my really dark imaginings, like they created this whole personality just for this mission. They destroyed, you know, Talia Winters for this. I imagine she goes back to Psycorp and is just killed, right? Like
yeah, probably.
They just Christ. Personality wipe her again. You can just keep doing it.
Yeah. Wow. You know. It's that's the part that like really messes with me. When I first was thinking about this episode, I thought, wait, so did they create Talia? But it's like, no, Control is the created personality. Like it speaks
right.
to
Talia
the,
Winters right. existed.
Yeah. It speaks to like the utter disposability of these people to Psycor. Like they didn't even take someone who was like a loyalist and do this. It's like, no, we just make like a whole other person because we can just do
made
that.
Made someone up. Yeah. Holy crap, that's scary.
They're bad people.
Yeah. Yeah.
I have my well, okay, so my last JMS quote that I found was regarding what you're asking, which is like, so that's it? Like, what do they do? Like, in universe, what do they do with Talia? Because she doesn't come back on the show. Yeah. But in universe, they send her away, and he says something that's like, if we jettisoned her out the airlock, like if the Babylon 5 crew was like, well, she needs to be killed, then they're as bad as Psycorp. They're like, you don't work with our group. You're an evil person. You're out of here. You're a threat. So they just send her out and basically put her on an abandoned ship and was like, you can go figure out what you're going to do. And yeah, she'll probably go back to Psycorp and be killed or wiped again. But they didn't want to have their hands dirty by actually killing her themselves, which is sketchy.
Which is that would have been JMS's pretty dark. Thing.
Yes.
Yeah, I think it works. Honestly, I think it works. Like I said, I think it works that she does get away because there is nothing to be done. You know.
Yeah.
And weirdly, like, we have all this sadness, and then the final scene is this like deeply positive emotional scene where Lita is talking to Kosh. She goes into his quarters and says that she kept his secret in the deepest corner of her mind and says, only at night would I open that small door where I kept the memory of you, which is a really like nice thing to say to someone.
Yeah, it's sweet. I like that Kosh has a friend.
Yeah, Kosh has a friend, and he pops open that box for Lita, and we fade out on a weird zoom into her eye.
I know what this is about. I can't say nothing.
Awesome.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah, I know. This is referencing, like, Kosh's deal. They'll find it out.
I'm excited. Is it? Can you tell, at least tell me, is it season 3?
Yeah, it was where I was watching that they showed great. This whole thing.
So, I mean, any stray notes, y'all?
I don't think so. I think that's it.
It's a big episode. I felt like it was important to kind of go in order because it's very busy.
Yeah. It's like busy, and also, like I said, like, it is just the one plot, but that one plot is like, oof.
Right.
I just want to say props to Babylon 5 for making the reason that Ivanova is scared to get wiped an even better reason than my mom died. Like, you'd think that would be the most traumatizing part of it. And so I was genuinely completely surprised that there was more story there.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, because
that was cool.
When I was rewatching this episode, I was like, wait, did we know this before? I had this sort of feeling that she might have also told Sheridan, but it's like, no, I look back on it and it's like, no, this is like, they come at, you know, season 2, they're like, no, there's more to her whole story.
Well, we'll see more. We'll have more tragedy. We're nearing the end of the season, which is exciting too. We're like getting all this stuff is finally coming to a big head. But that's kind of what I have, folks. I was actually going to ask you, Olivia, since this is your guest segment, what would you like to plug for yourself?
Ah, geez. See, I was going to have stuff ready to plug. I guess I have my writing. Let's see. Should have had this ready beforehand. This is my first podcast guest appearance. But yeah, I write like cultural criticism of video games and anime sometimes. I wrote this one piece that everyone yelled at me for like a year, so it was pretty good.
Nice.
That is medium.com/OJHH92. Which are just my initials.
There you go.
There you go. And then not my birth, not the year I was born, but the year that I tell companies that I was born. Don't give things away, you know?
This is good. Because then they'll take your personality and turn you into a psychic slave.
Yeah, they'll like take you off your cushy job on Babylon 5 where you get to be part of the TV show.
Mm-hmm.
You know?
But again, thank you very much, Olivia, for joining us.
Yeah.
We loved having you. Glad to be your first guest podcast experience.
Thanks for having me on to be like, this psychic mind control plot is about straight girls, actually.
Always loving it.
That's my brand, folks.
Mm-hmm. And we will be right back after this brief musical break to discuss the long Twilight struggle with another guest. Before we bring in our second guest to talk about the second episode, we have some emails to read you for you this week.
Yeah.
Magellan, can you read us this first email from our buddy Dan?
I sure can. This email is about our coverage of And Now for a Word and In the Shadow of Zahadum. I can't make that noise because I have a sore throat and I'll irritate it. Dan writes, back in season 1, you guys covered the episode Believers. And what you said you liked about that episode was that it gave the show a framing device for just going around to the various characters and asking them, what do you think about this thing? And then you learn a bunch about the characters and what they're going through by their varying responses to the same question. That kind of happens here with And Now for a Word, but it has this bigger context that Babylon 5 seems to be swept up in, a shooting war. Whoops, I'm really not reading ahead in sentences here.
But it has the bigger context in that Babylon 5 seems to be swept up in a shooting war, as opposed to the less complex but no less sad question of, should we violate some parental rights and perform a life-saving operation on a child? Good point. I always think about that interview with Franklin when he talks about not laughing at airlock jokes, because there's multiple times throughout the series when someone from the command staff jokes about tossing someone out the airlock. It's just this odd little character beat. Yeah, and it's like, why? What question from the reporter got him to start talking
about that? Got him to talk about that, exactly.
Yeah. I can't help but compare Sheridan from In the Shadow of Zahadum with Jack Bauer from 24.
Wow.
There, sure. There was an episode in season 1 of 24 where Jack needed to get information about an impending terrorist attack, and the guy who had some info about it was some child molester. Jack has this dude chained up to a chair, and he tortures the information out of him. And once the guy gives up the information, while he's still chained to the chair, Jack pulls out a gun and shoots the guy dead. And Jack Bauer is the good guy in that show. But while 24 was a right-wing masturbatory fantasy, Babylon 5 is a little more balanced and nuanced in how much it'll let its characters get away with. We understand that Sheridan is completely in the wrong here, and we understand why. And this show lives in a world where actions have consequences, and I was glad to see that Sheridan wasn't above them. What did he do again?
Who, Sheridan? Oh, yeah. The Morden stuff, when he was like letting Morden go and he's trying to get information out of him.
Oh, yeah. Duh. Yeah, yeah. Good comparison. On that note, they let Morden go lest they risk tipping their hat to the Shadows and letting them know what they know. But I can't help but think that Morden in the Shadows should at least be a little suspicious when the gung-ho captain who's holding him illegally and is doing so with a bunch of fire and brimstone just suddenly turns on a dime and is like, okay, you can go, no reason. Yeah, yeah, that's super suspicious. Oh my gosh. I guess we have to assume that Morden is so, like, egotistical to the extent that he'd be like, yeah, he did let me go, stupid idiot.
Dumb dumb, big dummy, yeah.
Maybe that's what we're hoping for, counting on. But this does answer a couple questions about Morden, like how he's been able to go invisible in times past, and like how he and Kosh had a fight when they first crossed paths, and he was apparently able to hold his own. I'm not a fan of the black and white flashback scenes, and I'm sad to say that you haven't seen the last of them.
Dan keeps bringing up this thing where Kosh and Morden had a fight in a hallway, and I know what he's talking about, but he also puts he, as in Morden, as he in quotes here, and I'm more confused than before now.
I think what Dan is saying is that Kosh could see the invisible shadow monsters that were hanging out with Morden, and Kosh was like fighting them.
Oh, do you think he does like Kung Fu? Does he think like Kung Fu Panda shit on them?
I don't think they fought like that. I think it was more like a...
Mind fight?
A mind fight, yeah.
I wish he did Kung Fu, though. Kosh doing Kung Fu with, like, big feet would be awesome.
We don't talk enough about how in every fight scene, there's somebody who does a big, sweeping martial arts kick all the time. That's, like, Babylon 5's version of people grappling, is they do these elegant, jumpy kicks.
In the future...
It happens in the second episode, too.
Yeah, it extremely happens in the second episode. In 2259, people learned the art of the roundhouse kick.
Yeah.
And then finally, those black and white flashback scenes. It's just an awkward, like, cinematic technique of, like, it's the past.
We're Who using had a archival black and white flashback scene?
In the case of this one, it's like when... Well, in the case of the one we just talked about, it's also when, like, Garibaldi's remembering all the times Talia spoke to Kosh. Like, they do it a couple of times. Whenever someone's remembering, like, something that happened before in the episodes.
They put, like, a weird filter on it.
Yeah, and it's just, like, it's nothing. It doesn't accomplish much.
Yeah.
Love Franklin. Love the email. Loved In the Shadow of Zahadum. Love the comparison to 24 also, because, yeah, I think that show very firmly sees itself as, like, pro-torture in a lot of ways, at least from what I watched of it way back in the day. And as we have seen in this show, the actions of people like Sheridan in the Shadow of Zahadum are frowned upon and seen as ruinous, which is, it's taking a stance, which I really like. That brings us to our second email, though, from our pal Marcus. And
why don't you?
You know what? I will, Magellan.
That would make me happy.
Good. So you can rest your dang cords, my those larynx. Dang voice cords. Your larynx and your pharynx, yeah. He says, it's funny that the shadows remind you of the Protheans from Mass Effect. The precursors were Jack and Daxter, another one of my favorite game franchises. Since I remember feeling the opposite when I played Mass Effect, having first seen B5. To me, Mass Effect felt like equal parts Babylon 5 and the new Battlestar Galactica, and I was so happy that finally there was an original sci-fi universe that felt every bit as detailed as my favorite shows. Yeah, that is a good point. Like, just because it's copying it doesn't mean it's, like, just repetitive. Like, it's not just doing the exact same thing. It's bringing in a bunch of different good influences, and that isn't necessarily a bad thing. But you play Mass Effect, and all I can ever see in that now is Babylon 5 and Farscape and Star Trek. Like, it's just those things, but done slightly messier because it's harder to write games. He goes on, further on, I can see how you'd be tired of the first one sci-fi trope. But while I'm sure someone did it before JMS, it's worth noting that all the examples you cite, KOTOR, Mass Effect, and Farscape, came after B5. So I think he deserves credit for originality. Yeah,
that's what we were saying, I think. That was right. Our point.
Yeah.
Is if Babylon 5 was made today, we'd be like, what? And since we're viewing it today, it's not this like revelatory way to tell a story. But in the context of when it was made...
This must have been a big deal.
I'm fine with it.
Definitely. I think the payoff ends up being pretty cool and unique, and I'm glad you guys seem to be on board despite its familiarity. Yeah, I mean, we're used to it. We're ready for this one. Some other stray notes. Both of your impressions are getting better and better, with special mention for Alan's Londo, Mr. Garibaldi, and Magellan's Veer, and Kosh.
Thank you. Thank you. I really like where my Kosh is going. I think it's favorite. I think it's my favorite impression I've ever done on chats.
On chats for, yeah, it's a good one.
Show, yeah. Maybe Pilot from Farscape, but
it was so classic. You should listen to the episode then with Kosh immersion, because I did some fun effects on your voice.
Oh, yeah?
He says he would love to hear those incorporated into the Applebee's bit. We're going to bring Applebee's back every season. You already know that.
Yeah.
It's mandatory.
We're going to do our finale at an Applebee's. I don't know.
It's going to be us and the Doughboys.
Oh, sorry. Were we keeping that a secret?
Oh, yeah. Well, we'll hopefully people will forget in like a year. On that note, Magellan,
don't show up. We're going to the Applebee's in Times Square.
Don't go.
Don't go. We really need it to be quiet.
Is there really an Applebee's in Times Square?
Yeah.
That sounds like a nightmare, dude.
Yeah, of course.
On that note, Magellan's JMS impression, speaking about the bear in There All the Honor Lies, reminds me of the way Jerry Doyle, who is Garibaldi, would impersonate Doug Netter, the producer, in some of the DVD commentaries. Those are a hoot, by the way. A bit cynical at points in like a Galaxy Quest style, but you can tell there's camaraderie there.
They hate each other? Like that kind of cynical?
No, I bet you they're just like, oh, this is stupid. The show is dumb. Like, we're enjoying a dumb show. To your point about the Anna Sheridan stuff being set up well, the episode Knives was supposed to air before Zaha Doom to remind us about her and the Icarus. As you'll soon see, that and the Babylon 5 batting cages are the only redeeming qualities of the episode. He's glad we enjoyed Sheridan coming a part of the team as much
Knives?
As he did.
Which one was Knives?
Londo has a friend who comes on the ship and duels him.
Oh, and Sheridan has that weird plot where he's mind controlled or whatever. Yes. Or scared. He's like really scared.
And it's a friendly alien, yeah.
I got it. Okay.
Finally, he's glad we enjoyed Sheridan coming apart of the seams as much as he did. He felt he was really written as an aw gosh Iowa boy in the beginning. And it's great to see Box later and get his first of many chances to show some range, and he nailed it.
He's a great actor.
That really showed in the second episode when he's just yelling back at Londo and Jakar, like not just being passive and polite anymore, which I think is awesome.
And we'll talk about it. As we start talking about that.
Yeah, so let's again take it to one more brief musical break, and we'll be back with our special guest to discuss The Long Twilight Struggle.
Welcome back to Chatsalon 5. The second episode we watched this week was Season 2, Episode 20, The Long Twilight Struggle. It was written by J. Michael S. Directing. Sorry, directed by Michael Behar. It aired November 16th, 1995. And it takes place from Sunday the 3rd to Sunday the 10th of December 2259. Alan.
Hello.
Hi, what happened in this episode?
Well, Magellan, I'm very glad you asked. In this episode, a final bloody battle determines the outcome of the Centauri-Narn conflict and signals an even greater threat to all civilization.
Oh, no.
Oh,
Alan,
shoot.
This is a scary episode. I wish we had a friend with us.
If only we had a special pal that could talk us through the tragedy that is the Long Twilight Struggle. Hello? Is that? Who could it be? It's Danny, everyone.
It's a long-distance call from Denmark.
Wow.
Perfect.
Wow.
Yeah, not the Netherlands, Denmark.
No, not at all the Netherlands. Thank you, Danny, for roasting me. Danny, listener Danny, who's been an emailer and contributor to the show before, is now on the podcast. Welcome him to the show. Yay!
Yay! Hi, Danny. Long-time listener, first-time caller, huh?
Yeah.
In a sense.
That's the first time for everything.
Danny, I'm curious, what is your history with Babylon 5?
I got introduced to Babylon 5 via my dad, and I've seen it since I was 10 years old, and I've rewatched it about 20 times, so I've got a pretty long history with it.
Yeah. You've watched it 20 times?
At least.
Oh my god.
That's crazy. That's awesome.
That was last 2 years ago. I watched it 3 times in a year, and that probably wasn't the best idea, but...
Oofa doofa.
So we always like to ask our guests why they picked the episode they did. And if you've seen the show that many times, it's a particularly poignant question. What made you want to talk about the Long Twilight Struggle?
It's not the best episode in Babylon 5 completely, but it's my favorite episode for many reasons, actually. But one of the reasons is that it has some of the greatest moments in Babylon 5 from start to finish. So,
yeah, really just a showcase for the best acting that you're going to get out of these characters.
Yeah, I mean, we all know that we're talking about Delenn's friend who lives on the planet, right?
Yeah, draws the best character.
Yeah.
Obviously, that's best part.
He's the highlight of the episode.
Yeah, but no, that's one scene in this episode that I can still remember watching when I was 10 years old. So that's probably one of the reasons why.
Mm. Yeah. When you mentioned when you emailed in saying you wanted to guess that there was like a moment or a line that you have like that you hold near and dear to your heart. And we'll get there. We're going to try and go slightly linear because this is an episode that happens very much in like linear space. It doesn't jump back and forth a lot.
Yeah, we should get that. Yeah.
So for sure, we start on Centauri Prime. I always love it when an episode starts on Centauri Prime because you know shit's gonna go down.
Yeah.
And Rifa's there, and Rifa's like, "Hey, Londo, the war is like done. You're the architect of our victory. Great job, man. You're doing so good." And you're like, "Wait, but like, it's amazing that this war that started in the middle of the season is done at the before the end of this season."
Yeah.
Usually a war like this is going to go on for like multiple seasons and not end clean. And they're like, no, we're done. Like, there's no more fighting to do. We're going to win tonight.
There's a sliver of hope in this scene because Rifa's being extra shitty and Londo is being like angry at him in a way where you think he's going to make a good decision and tell Rifa that he's a bad, bad man. And then
he does not.
Yeah.
Woof.
Delenn communicates with an old friend telepathically, and David Corwin discovers a mysterious energy signature, which is the truest Babylon 5 like mood episode intro. It's like Corwin's like, "I'm detecting an energy signature," and then we get this like weirdly sexual scene of Sheridan taking a shower with his his pasty white ass.
Actually, that's one of the things I actually hate about this episode is that particular scene.
What? Come on, man.
But it doesn't make sense for me because they make a weird cut where they say what they call to Ivanova, and then next cut it cuts to Sheridan in the shower. Why?
Why exactly? Why?
Every time I watch it, I always think that it's Ivanova in the bath, but then I think that's not Ivanova, and then show. It doesn't make any sense.
No, it does not. It's true. And not only is it like this weird, like, check out our captain of the ship showering, but then he comes out in his towel or whatever, in his robe.
It's like full robe. By the way, who does that? Like, who showers and puts on a big old robe?
I used to.
Really? You used to just wear a whole robe?
Yeah, it's way nicer. You can just dry by walking around the house.
Yeah, but how? Okay, so let me ask you a question. How long are you in that robe before you're like, I think robe time is over?
As long as you want.
I guess I only ever shower in the morning when I'm late for work, so the concept of that seems completely foreign to me.
Yeah, and it turns out that Drawl, who, like, when Delenn is speaking to her old friend, you hear the voice, and he's like, ha ha ha, Delenn, I miss you. You're like, who the fudge is this? And then in this scene, you see him, and you're like, I'm clearly supposed to remember who you are, but it's been a season. You're some guy. And then, yeah, after the theme song, we learned that it's Drawl, the guy who gave up his life to be the guardian of Epsilon 3. Epsilon 3 is the name of the planet that's under Babylon 5. Is that correct?
Yeah, that's correct.
And thank you. And
if only we had Danny here every week.
Is that right? Should we get that right? And he's basically just like, Sheridan, come down to my sweet condo. You can bring one friend. We'll have boat drinks and we'll have a good time.
You know who it's going to be. Just say Delenn. Just say bring Delenn. What a dumb, like, you know who you're going to bring.
Yes. It's completely unnecessary. We finally get into the main A plot.
Wait, you forgot the best part of that scene, which is halfway through it happening, Drawl is like, by the way, if you need to get dressed, I can go. And you're like, bud, why did you just indiscriminately phase into his quarters without announcing yourself and then offer to leave?
Yeah, exactly.
And Drawl also, sorry, go on.
No, you go ahead.
Also, it's interesting that in first time we meet Drawl, he's a sweet old man, and then in this episode, he's totally different.
Yeah,
he's got a big booming voice and stuff.
I love the big booming voice, but I mean, he's shown as younger. He's no longer an old man. He's like I lost 30 years. I'm in my best appearance. I'm hot now. But he's
Like, really? Delenn is like, he's so fit from back in the day when he was fit.
And then we get this amazing, this is like the key middle of the episode, is it's a pair of scenes. The first one is Anarn telling Shakaar, we are going to lose the entire war. We learned that it's his uncle. And he offers this final plan, basically, that they found this Centauri weapon depot where they're getting all their resources. And if the Narns strike quickly and fast enough, they can not end the war, but prolong it long enough that they can wait out the Centauri's forces till the point where they won't want to fight anymore. Mm-hmm. Otherwise, they lose. Jakar rightfully is doubtful of this, and he leaves, because this leaves the Narn, the homeworld, completely defenseless. But he says, I mean, I guess, if you think we're going to lose the war... We get, like, honestly, perfectly matched shot of Reefa and Londo then talking about the same plot. And he's like, hey, we're going to go flat. He says, we're going to go flatten the Narn homeworld.
Yeah.
Like, you tell me this isn't a nasty imperialist monster that is Lord Reefa. And even, again, Londo is hesitant because he's like, I don't want to call the shadows for the umpteenth time. Like, we can't keep just bringing in my, like, weird friends who kill people for no reason and then ask of me my entire life. This is bad.
I appreciate that what the show has done with this conflict is every inflection point where it could have ended, it's Londo's fault that it didn't end. Like, unequivocally, it's not that Reefa was able to consolidate power and then the war got out of control. He says to Londo, like, it's too far now, you can't turn back or whatever. But Londo still has the choice to say no, and he still chooses to keep going. There's never a point at which it's actually out of his hands.
Yeah, Danny, what did you think of this pair of scenes?
I like the way the director shot the Jakar scene.
Yeah,
but I just didn't like that lighting effect that they had on that Yeah, in that other scene.
Yeah, the Narn stuff is lit very dark and kind of, it just makes it hard to see anything. Is that what you're talking about?
Yeah.
Yeah, it's a bit rough. And because then you, especially when you compare them back to back in like the Centauri or like in this, and I think it's slightly intentional.
Yeah. I don't get the why it should be intentional, because light and dark, it usually means good and evil.
Right.
So why are the Centauri good? But because they're not. So I don't get it.
Right, especially because by the end of this episode, they are firmly saying, like, no, the Centauri are, like, horrible people.
Well, you know, I wonder, I think it's a commentary on the sort of, like, cultural assumptions that we make around, I mean, just that idea of, like, one culture being more civilized than another. The fact that Londo, in the same breath, and we'll get to the scene later where he lays out the conditions of the surrender, but we're in the same breath, he's like, hey, by the way, if a Narn kills a Centauri, we kill 500 Narns, and we're going to make them more civilized.
Yeah,
it's like, well,
yeah.
Maybe these markers of wealth and power and civilization are actually markers of moral depravity on some level. Or, at the very least, it doesn't actually make you any better than anybody else.
Yeah, but that's an interesting discussion with the Londo character in this particular scene. Because you can say, is he a puppet, or has a choice or not?
Right.
It feels like he has a choice. It really feels like he keeps having a choice.
I think he convinces himself that he doesn't, but he does. Yeah.
I think that's great.
That's the saddest read of it, so it's probably correct based on the show so far.
Yeah.
They briefly keep cutting back to the draw stuff, but none of it matters. We can just go through it. Basically, Garibaldi is like, Sheridan Delenn, what if they're lying to you? What if draw is fake? And what if that isn't draw? And what if he's lying to you and he wants to kill you?
And then Ivanova comes in and she's like, nope, that was real.
That was real. Can confirm. That was from 3 miles below Epsilon 3. It's real. Basically, Delenn and Sheridan arrive on Epsilon 3, and they're like, wow, that same techno bridge from season 1. It's so big.
Remember when you weren't impressed by it last season? Take another look.
Now it's impressed. Exactly. Now isn't it super? We got a better budget. I just want to go back to, it's like the Applebee's bit.
It's the same shot. It's not anything different.
It's just the Applebee's bit. Every season they go back to it and it gets a little, they improve something about it. Draw basically, all that comes from this is that Draw says that, like, hey, Sheridan, you're doing great work and there's a big war coming and I'm willing to help you 100% with that war. Good luck.
Also, like, I know everything and can see everywhere.
Yeah, just tell them who's going to win.
You'd think that Sheridan would be like, okay, I have a couple questions in my notepad, actually. if you can see all information in the universe.
Yeah, that's kind of makes you... It kind of makes you Sauron, but a good Sauron.
Right. Yeah.
Exactly. Then we just get like really leaning into all the sad stuff with the A plot. Reva is telling Londo, like, hey, we are going to take the Narn homeworld. The shadows are going to defend our supply base. I want you to come with me to the Narn homeworld as we blow them up. I want you to be on the front lines. Like, basically saying, like, you don't get to detach from this for 1 second longer. You're going to be there when we win.
Mm-hmm.
Which is so sad. And Londo's like, I don't want to. Like, what if I don't want to see it? Like, this sucks. And we get the shot later of him, like, looking out the window, just heartbroken and crestfallen and realizing that this is all his doing. And it's like, what do you even start to think at that point?
It's sort of, you know, I think the dueling episode helped clarify for me the way that Londo views the world and views conflict. He kind of has this romantic view of the Centauri as a race and what they deserve, what they're going to do. Like that moment where Reva's like, hey, just bring in your evil friends to help us out. And Londo says, no, you know, this should be our victory.
Yeah, we've done this before on our own. Why can't we do it without them?
Yeah, we should have the honor of like winning ourselves. And we shouldn't use mass drivers to nuke the surface of Narn. We should win in a more dignified and like approved way. So he has these hangups about the right way of doing things. And, you know, I don't think that bombing Narn is the kind of victory that he's been craving. I think the victory he's been craving is like totally discrediting Jakar. That is the thing that he has been hungrier to do.
Uh-huh.
And this was more like, ugh, I don't want to look at the realities of war.
Speaking of just like the ways that the war is affecting people on Babylon 5, I was really fascinated by this scene where Franklin is telling Jakar that one of the refugees he's taken care of was interrogated and asked about the defenses of Narn, as if it was like this desperately urgent, like, if we were to attack right now, how would we do it? Mm-hmm. And it's like Franklin is basically giving a general, like, key military information.
Yeah, second time this season, actually.
Did he do that before?
Yeah, he did that in The Coming of Shadows.
I think I know what you're talking. Yes.
Yeah.
It seems like Franklin, despite being the guy who said, like, during the Earth-Minbari War, he didn't participate because he believed that all of the lives were worth preserving, he still sees a side that is worthy of, like, more needing of help right now and wants to press them a little bit. And then, yeah, just here comes... This is honestly the saddest scene for me. Like, most intense is obviously the final, like, victory condition scene, but... we are cutting back and forth between Ambassador Jakar praying to the Jaquan for victory or for safety or for life or anything. We don't hear what he says. And we're just getting these, like, kind of slow plodding shots of the shadows coming in to the Narn fleet on their base. And they're just getting ripped in half. And Majan, before recording, was suggesting that this is, like, where they would kick in the classical music if this was a modern show.
Yeah.
I mean, it's heartbreaking. Like, you're watching a war be lost, and you're watching these people.
They're also showing you, like, five new things the shadows can do.
Yeah.
Like, oh, their ships can explode into a bunch of tiny ships. And if you try to jump through hyperspace, they can turn that into, like, a unstable wormhole or whatever.
A death drive.
Yeah.
Yeah, regenerate. Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. That too, yeah, if you shoot one of them, they can just split up like amoeba or something. I'm curious, actually, Danny, because you've watched this show not on Amazon before, so, like, is it true that the CG in these moments looks better on, like, DVD, for example?
I've been told that they look better on DVD, so I am inclined to agree.
But you yourself have not experienced that?
I have not experienced it, but okay. I've seen comments on it.
This was one of the first parts where I was like, I would have really loved to see this on, like, a good, on a good rip of it, just looking beautiful because it's so sad.
I've actually seen scenes shot in smaller scale, and they look like they could be made today, actually. So that's something about the aspect ratio that makes the CGI look really, really bad.
Hmm.
Yeah, it just looks low res. The Cautious Ship is always my, like, go-to example of that, where it's like, this probably looked fine when it came out.
Yeah.
I can't even be like, and then this sad thing happens. It's just this whole entire freaking episode. I want to ask you, as somebody who's watched more of the show or watched the entire show all the way through, like, is this the tone that we should expect from later Babylon 5?
Oh, no.
Just tragedy always? Like, is this the show now?
To kind of paraphrase the mood of the whole series, is kind of like, bad stuff happens, but there's always light. Like, it's kind of like the Minbari way of life, is their perspective of life. In a way, there's always a candle somewhere in the dark.
Wow. I'm into that.
Yeah, Drawl sort of previews that a little bit, right? He's like, things are bad, but maybe there's hope.
Yeah. Yeah, but some really sad things are going to happen. And
oh, boy.
Yeah, so it's really uplifting.
Right. It's just like, sometimes you're watching it and you're like, I hope something good comes out of this. And as you're starting to think that, I mean, there's also a part where one of the Narn relays a final message to Jakar. I think we don't know exactly what it is, but I figured it was him telling to Jakar to ask Sheridan for sanctuary.
Yeah.
That's at least how I understood that. And then just if you're like us and these are your two favorite men on the show, Londo and Garibaldi crossing paths, and the way Garibaldi looks at Londo, like he's become the villain, he's become Lex Luthor, yeah. Like,
yeah,
disgusted I am, is heart wrenching. These used to be friends. They used to be best pals. They used to go to the casino together and get drunk. It was awesome. And now they can't even look at each other. And Londo's like, I want a meeting of the councils. Get them to me now. Call up Kosh. Get Kosh off of his boat in Cabo and have him come here.
Yeah. Yeah.
And yeah, this is sort of like the amazing grand finale of it all. But Londo laying out these conditions of victory. Danny, do you remember the main 3 points here?
Sorry, I didn't get the question.
Oh, just like when Londo is laying out the conditions of victory, we can go down the list and talk about them.
Yeah, I can remember them. Yeah. That's the death penalty thing.
Yep. Yeah. The penalty for a Narn killing a Centauri is 500 Narn, which is so absurd.
Yeah, nuts. Absurd. The protectorate part of the Narn colonization was also a term.
Yep. Yep, they're going to turn the Narn Empire into a colony, and they're no longer their own. They're no longer their own people. Basically, we're going to install a provisional government, and then the final one, just the Narn ruling body, the Kari, if I understood that correctly.
Yeah, mm-hmm. That's correct.
Must all submit to trial, and then Sheridan's like, "An Earth will be present for that," and he's like, "No!" He just shouts, "They will not! You're not getting that."
No.
And finally, sort of like the corollary is Londo just having his cake and eating it too. It's like, also, that Jakar guy over there, he says, like, Ambassador Jakar, no longer ambassador. Fuck that. He's Citizen Jakar, says it like he's spitting it out of his mouth.
Yeah. And the way he says now.
Yeah. It will happen now. And Sheridan finally has a moment of like any control in this and is like, no, Jakar asked for sanctuary. You don't get to take that from him. He gets to stay on Babylon 5. He doesn't get to be an ambassador anymore, but he can hang out here because we paid Andreas Katsoulis for multiple seasons and we're not getting rid of him. He's,
yeah,
he's too good.
If you look closely on his Katsoulis acting in when he asks for sanctuary, it's just marvelous.
Yeah, yeah. It's a very subtle part. It's like, when he walks into Sheridan's office asking for that, he looks like a child who just like lost, who broke, who like crashed the car or something. Like, yeah. Oh, I'm sorry. I need a favor.
Yeah.
Let me live anymore. It's so sad.
Okay. There's some really good Jakar Londo scenes now coming up in season 3. So get chunked for that.
They're still going to talk to each other.
Yeah, it's there's two. I can come to one scene that fans enjoy. So look forward to that.
That's fantastic. I guess because if they're both gonna be on the ship and their war is over, then it's like, well, now I guess we just have to live near each other. Okay.
Yeah.
And then speaking of like a candle in the darkness, I think.
Well,
can we at least
say an excerpt of Jakar's what Jakar says to Londo.
Oh, certainly.
Certainly, yeah.
Because he's like not looking at Lon. He's been quiet with his head down the whole time, just sort of taking this humiliation. And then he stands upright.
Yeah.
And, you know, gathers all of his dignity. And he says to Londo, without looking at him, "No dictator, no invader can hold an imprisoned population by force of arms forever. There's no greater power in the universe than the need for freedom. Against that power, governments and tyrants and armies cannot stand. The Centauri learned this lesson once. We will teach it to them again. Though it take 1,000 years, we will be free." Oh, man.
Yeah, he's not going. Woof. He's not going anywhere.
That's when JMS is the best.
Yeah.
When he does that.
Yeah, when you're brought to your breaking point, what do you even say? Like when somebody just strips you of all rank, eliminates your entire race of people, and forces you to beg for your like right to live, what do you even say? And the answer is like, "I'll be back," basically.
Yeah, I'll be back. Yeah.
It's fantastic. Amazing acting, amazing across the board.
Actually, I have a question about this particular moment for you.
Sure.
because I don't really know many that have watched Babylon 5 in my friend group, and I kind of want to know if it's if that is a good scene to show people first, or if it is not, like the first taste of Babylon 5.
And that's early on. Yeah. Mm. Well, you mean like if parts of this episode or that scene in particular are a good like check out what this show has to offer kind of thing?
Yeah.
It's tough. We think about this constantly with our podcast because we are watching these things usually for that we try to watch them for the first time. And if you're going to show somebody a TV show, do you show them the start when things are rough, or do you show them like the show at its best and tell them it's going to get there?
Exactly. Yeah.
I think the cinematography of that scene goes a long way to express the fact that Londo is being unusually cruel. Like the way that he's shot really tight to his face, and then just people going quiet when he shouts now.
Yeah.
It gives you a sense of how things usually are, as well as how the scene is departing from that.
Mm-hmm.
And like really everybody's turning in their best performances here. You've got Kosh doing nothing. But yeah. This is like the best of Jakar, the best of Londo, probably the best of Sheridan. Maybe not the best of Delenn, but you know, she's there doing her thing.
Doing her best.
Yeah. I think if I saw this scene, I'd be like, damn, I gotta understand.
Yeah.
I gotta understand why Hair Guy hates Lizard Guy so much.
Well, it takes you back to the theme that we brought up earlier of season two, which is like, that's the same Londo. Is you jump ahead and you show someone like, hey, here's this crazy like leader of an empire, and he's telling this other guy to beg for him and taking everything he owns away from him.
Anyway, and here's this episode from season one where he falls in love with a prostitute and
cries. exactly. Like... And be like, yeah, that's the same guy. He didn't like have it. He didn't transform. He didn't pull a Delenn. He's the same guy. Deal with that and come to reckoning with that. And just that promise can like get, I probably can convince someone to watch the whole show.
Yeah. But you'll probably be a little confused about Londo's character when you see him starting. He's all happy, and then he gets to this. But yeah,
right. You're like, how did he go from like silly cartoon character? I was rewatching part of The Gathering as we were talking about the previous episode, and Londo in The Gathering is so, he's played for so much comedy. Like weirdly, in that Jakar is the one who is like sneaky and has plans and is like a tough military smart guy, and then Londo is just a cartoon funny man, so you fall in love with him and you learn to think he's so charming, and then he just makes this huge heel turn and now I can't stand him.
There's also a very underrated scene in this episode, I think.
Mm-hmm.
Can you guess what scene I'm referring to? It comes right after.
Is it the Ranger scene?
No, it's
the one actually, where Sheridan talks to Jakar and is like, you're a cool guy.
No, it's actually the scene where Londo is sitting watching the Centauri Emperor on the screen.
Oh, yeah, he's watching the TV.
Yeah, and you can just see in his face that he's thinking about his, am I happy? You can just see on his face expression that he's not happy.
Right, because the news report is like, yeah, they're also conquering other places.
Yeah.
And he's like, oh,
I thought this was done. It.
Yeah.
And it's also a really good throwback to science importance in season one, where he's gets the what do you want thing scene.
Right, he gets
and
the...
Now he's got it, and he's not happy.
Yeah.
It's kind of... sad.
Mm-hmm. Oh, I love it. I do adore this show so much and its ability to just like present us with something and then crush it in front of us and be like, oh, you wanted that? Here that is.
Yeah.
The Centauri are now conquering planets around the Narn homeworld. And we see this report from the perspective of the I think it's the Zocalo. It's a bar in Babylon 5. And
no, it's in the squalls, actually.
Oh, it is quarter. That's in quarter. Oh, well, no, but then there's a later scene where it's all the citizens, like the regular people on Babylon 5.
Ah, yeah, okay.
And they all just, it's just all the Centauri and Narn just start kicking each other's asses and like doing kung fu against each other, and it's wild.
Yeah.
It's tension that's been ratcheted up on that ship for months. You know, like, I understand why they immediately come to blows, but it just feels comical for them to be like, "I'm sick of you. Time to die right now."
Karate.
Yeah, one of them does a roundhouse kick and just like flips a dude. It's so much.
It's so the 90s, so much.
Oh yeah. Oh yeah. I feel like the Matrix coming out finally fixed people's obsession with Kung Fu and like snapped us out of that a little. It kind of reignited it too in a way, but yeah. And then just again, speaking of like Candle in the Dark, like maybe there's a little bit of hope coming out of this. The episode ends on Delenn introducing Sheridan to the Rangers and saying, "Hey, here are these Rangers. They've been on the ship forever. I run them. I'm passing this off to you, bud. This is your thing. You're going to lead the Army of Light against the Shadows."
Okay.
Exactly. Like, all right, here we... And he's just basically like, okay, well, we need it. So his line is, "For the last year, things haven't exactly been going our way. I started to wonder if it would ever get better. I think it just did. Tell the other Rangers, the ambassadors, everyone in this Army of Light that Babylon 5 stands with you. Tell them that from this place, we will deliver notice to the Parliaments of Conquerors that a line has been drawn against the darkness, and we will hold that line no matter the cost." Mm-hmm. So we had a badass military squad out of this very sad end of a war, and it's time to focus. Like, the Psycorp conspiracy continues to brew in the background, but the Shadow War is, like, our primary thing to be anxious about on Babylon 5.
Yeah.
So I'm excited.
It's also a part of Sheridan's whole arc of being becoming the leader.
Learning to accept his position. Yeah.
Yeah.
It's very exciting stuff. I'm curious, actually, Danny. I forgot to ask you. What was the scene that you said would you, like, made you want to talk about this?
It's the scene where Londo is looking down on the non-home world.
Oh, right. So, and being like, did I even want any of this? Yeah.
Yeah. I just watched it two times the last 2 weeks, this episode. And I got goosebumps both times when I watched it.
Yeah.
I watched it 20 times and I still get goosebumps. It kind of says it all.
I'm always coming back to that dream that Londo had where he sees the ships flying up overhead and like terrified of them. I think Londo just witnessing tragedy happening in front of him is always going to get me. Real good.
Yeah, that scene comes in season 3, I think.
Oh, where that's actually going to happen? That's very cool.
Yeah, that's going to happen.
Cool. I'm excited. I'm like, this episode made me just like want to get to season 3. I don't even know what the next two episodes are going to be. Yeah. But I want to get to the next like arc of the show.
The next two episodes are really weird, but okay.
Yeah. So get ready is what you're saying.
Yeah, get ready.
Oh boy. Yeah. Well, Magellan, do you mind telling me which episodes we're watching for the next Chancelon 5?
I've got you, bro. I'll let you know right now. Next week, we're finishing up season 2 of Babylon 5. First, we are watching season 2, episode 21, Comes the Inquisitor. Jakar rallies the Narns on the station to uphold the resistance effort against the Centauri. Cool. Then we're watching the season finale, season 2, episode 22, The Fall of Night. Earth reacts to the Centauri's rapid invasion of several worlds, but it's not what Sheridan expected.
Great.
Woof. Woof, woof, woof.
More sad stuff coming.
No, great.
Yeah,
the wiki picture for The Fall of Night has Koch opening his head again, so we're in for something.
Awesome.
Yeah. But it's a weird episode. The next one you're gonna see, it's really, you kind of would go like, "What Babylon 5? What are you doing now?"
Yeah, I love episodes like that. Honestly,
and your description actually missed the main part of the A plot in the next episode. Actually,
Delenn undergoes it. This is also from the wiki. I think it's weird. The Amazon summary pill is the same first sentence as the wiki summary. But then the wiki one goes on and says, Delenn undergoes a tortuous test of her allegiance to Koch by a bizarre emissary called Sebastian.
Yeah. Whoa. Yeah. Okay. That's so, main plot. So.
That sounds like main plot. I'm really excited. I want to say, first of all, thank you, Danny, for joining us. This was a great time.
Yeah, Danny.
It was a pleasure.
I appreciate your expertise and your calm level-headedness in these tough times as we get into the weeds. Do you have anything that you'd like to plug or anything people can find you online anywhere?
If you want to follow me on Twitter, I have my Twitter tag SJDannyMG. And that's probably it.
Love it. Love the good Twitter.
If
you would like to contact us, you can email us at chatspot@gmail.com, or we are also at chatspot on Twitter. You can rate us on iTunes and get that algorithm in our direction so more people can hear about the show. And if you want to support us financially, we would love that. If you went over to patreon.com/chatspod, you can donate at either $2 or $5 a month. You can get monthly commentaries at $2 or $5. You get two every 2 weeks, a hangout show called Chats Nights, which is, I think, one of the my favorite things that we record of the three things that we record together, Magellan. But yeah, Magellan, do you have a chatsum this week?
I do. I do have a chatsum. It's a fairly new Adult Swim program. If you, listen, I don't know how to present this, so I'm just going to say that the show, it's called Soft Focus, and it's a show that is starring and led by Jenna Friedman, who's a comedian who I believe she worked on The Daily Show prior to this show. And it's basically like, what's the best way to describe it? It's sort of that Daily Show vibe of like doing satirical news reports, but it's all about dismantling the patriarchy and like just horrible men doing horrible, horrible things. So the first episode, for example, she's confronting the problem of the epidemic of campus rape and sexual assault. And she's like, well, in high schools, teenagers are given dolls of babies to take care of, to understand what that's like. So we're giving these frat boys sex dolls to like take care of. You should just watch it because it makes sense when you watch it. And it's really good. And it makes you be like, ooh, you do not like men and how they are. Yuck, yuck, yuck.
Yep. I'm into that. That sounds exciting.
Yeah, you should check it out. What about you?
Well, I've been hanging out at the local, the place where we record, the Chatsalon Studios in sunny Red Bank, New Jersey.
Yeah.
And I've been watching, I've also been watching a TV show. That's coincidental. This is an easy one. If you like sci-fi and you want to see like what would happen if they did a modern sci-fi sort of like politics action show, sort of like Babylon 5, but today, let me introduce you to a little show called Star Trek Discovery. This is the currently airing Star Trek series. They are 3 episodes into season 2 as of this recording, and not enough people are talking about this show. I think the ratings are doing fine, but like it's amazing what they are able to do with both your expectations of Star Trek and your sort of like preconceived notions of what a story like that can be, because while it is really weird that it's not just people on a ship hanging out going on adventures, it still feels thematically 100% Star Trek. It uses the budget well. It doesn't just feel like it's glossy for no reason. It's shot beautifully. The like characters are really good. It's got a very diverse cast. They're building on arcs from season 1 in cool ways. It's fantastic. I really recommend it. It sucks that you have to get that, like, you have to use the CBS online service to watch it in the U.S. Actually, if you're outside of the U.S., it's on most countries' Netflix, so you can just watch it on Netflix. But if you're here, you got to get CBS All Access and watch Star Trek Discovery. Watch it. Talk about it with me, please. It's so good. I'm going to go watch a bunch of it right now.
Nice. Awesome.
And that, dear listener, is going to do it for this episode of Chatsalon 5. Peace.